call from mom. Answer it. Call silence.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thank you. Gentlemen and Giants, come in.
Happy New Year, everybody. This show is brought to you by me. So in lieu of advertising dollars, just do me a favor. Tell two friends about me. I hope you enjoy this episode.
This is the Birdcast.
Jeffs. Who are the Jeffs? They are esteemed filmmakers, and I'm lucky enough to have grace me with their presence.
Esteemed. That's a good
documentary filmmakers, would you call yourself?
I think you have to complete a full documentary and then you get to wear that label.
Well, okay. Well, that's a great question.
Right.
So
right.
What documentary are you guys working on now?
It's a little film we like to call I Am the Machine.
Ooh. Sounds interesting.
That's a
crossover because I have a story like that.
You do, actually.
Yeah.
We may have stolen this whole idea from your life.
So the Jeffs are the guys who did the documentary about me.
Surprise.
I wonder if anyone's really buying into the fucking horseshit intro I gave you guys.
No, probably not.
It's awkward talking on a podcast to you guys because I spent so much time intimately with you guys.
That's true.
A lot of intimate time.
But the biggest question I get asked on Twitter is what's going on with the doc?
What the hell are those guys doing? That's the subtext.
Yeah. What are those guys fucking doing?
Where do those guys go with our money?
Let me tell you something about America. Campaign. They believe a movie is shot and edited in a weekend.
That's a fact.
Exactly.
They definitely they know exactly how much it costs to make, but they think it's shot and edited in a fucking weekend. Because these guys are like, the day after we wrap, they're like, when are we going to get to see the doc?
Well, you know what's funny is we put the trailer out too on YouTube and...
So speaking right now is Jeff Johnson.
Jeff Johnson
is Reform Mormon.
yes, that's one of my many labels.
Reform Mormon.
Mormon Mormon. But we put the trailer up on YouTube, and some of the comments kind of were funny that way as well. There was one comment I remember that said, man, I just thought this thing was never going to happen because I heard about it like last year. And I'm like, yeah, when we put the trailer up, I mean, I think we had just finished – photography, principal photography, that's the technical term for what we're doing. Following you with a camera.
Sound grown up. Don't worry. Yes. Do you say words that people don't understand?
Principal photography, we had just wrapped that maybe a month and a half, two months
before
that.
I think you guys went on hiatus shortly
thereafter. Yeah,
we
were on hiatus.
Yeah. I mean, there was some...
You're talking to the mic, Jeff.
There was some personal time down. We had I had a couple of things come up that shut us down for a little bit.
It's an understatement.
Yeah, but... otherwise, and that's kind of the thing about Kickstarter is...
Romney lost and Jeff Johnson went down for a solid...
Right, that was very depressing.
Kickstarter gets the campaign going for the production, and everybody's aware of the production, but then they're hyper aware that it should be out.
Yeah.
And it's just, it takes a long time. It just takes a lot of personal time.
Do me a favor. This is probably one of the most fascinating projects I've ever been involved with, and I've done a lot of television, but this is the first... Shut the... Priscilla, this is the biggest mistake I ever made, buying this goddamn dog. I said I wanted a beast in my backyard. Now I got it. Some freaking unpredictable monster. There she goes. Who knows? She's probably going after Isla. So this is probably the most fascinating project I've ever been involved with. And I only say that because this came up at Jeff Hinman's dinner table.
Yes.
Of me talking about being on the road, and Jeff was like, that's an interesting idea. You should do a documentary now before you have any notoriety, and you can really see what it's like. It'll be a nice like glimpse back into the past. And I was like, that's great.
That was, yeah. I mean, Jeff and I, before, about for the 8 months prior to that, had been talking about we wanted to do something. We both love documentaries. We both wanted to get something shot and do something like that. And we were looking for a subject. And then, you and Leanne were over. And you actually said that you wanted a document to kind of show your daughters one day.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
I totally fucking forgot about that.
Yeah,
I did. I said I wanted a document to show my daughters.
Yeah. Well, when you're gone all the time, I imagine, you know. You're gone a lot as a father. It's probably the idea of being able to someday, and they won't be able to see it right away probably because, I mean, this thing is going to be X-rated probably at the very minimum. NC-17, I don't know. But someday to be able to show them, you know, a little bit about what you were doing when you were gone, you know.
Yeah, and then from that, you then said, like, the next time we had dinner, you were like, if you're serious about this.
Yeah, and then at that point, too, it was also, I mean, these things just cost money. And we really didn't want to put, I mean, you know, we have put some of our money into this, but we didn't want to put all the money into it.
Yeah.
And so we thought if we could do a successful Kickstarter campaign to kind of raise
the
most amount of money that we could to get on the road with you, because that's the biggest expense is be on the road.
You described Kickstarter to me. For those who have donated to the documentary, they know what it's about. But for people who are aspiring to make any kind of – describe Kickstarter to anyone that doesn't know what Kickstarter is.
Kickstarter is this – it's this phenomenal site that ultimately just is a way to crowdfunding is what I've heard referred to, where you can take a project. It can be an art project. It can be book. If you're a band and want to put out a new CD, a filmmaker, and you put your idea out there with a good description, with maybe a trailer of the idea that you have, which is what we did. We shot you. We shot some of your friends, some other comedians who knew you. We got a tease together to tell people what our idea was. You put it up there, and you list levels of rewards that people can get, you know, whether it's a CD, a DVD, sleeping with you one night. We haven't
working out in my man cave.
Working out in your man cave.
A barbecue we threw for the people.
We had a barbecue here. Trying to come up with some things that they can get, and everybody essentially just $5, $10, $50, $100 at a time helps invest in the film. Helps us get it made, and we raised what
we gave ourselves a month.
Yes,
we gave 30 days, and yeah, we raised $32,000.
It's remarkable, phenomenal. So I'm telling you when I say this, it's the coolest thing I've been a part of because we own it. It is entirely. I will say entirely your vision because you guys shot it, but it's entirely my vision too because I was there too, and it was real. It's going to be the coolest glimpse and the coolest fucking thing. I want to talk about a little bit about the documentary because I haven't seen any of it, but the coolest fucking thing that happened is this storm of events that collided right when we started shooting it. Number one was in order to get the funding. I knew very well that that I had just become really good friends with Joe Rogan, and I said I would love to talk about the funding on Joe's site. You then also came up with the machine shirt, which will fund my children's college experience. Machine shirt I give to Joe. Joe fucking loves. He wears the second he wears it, all of a sudden funding's complete.
Yeah,
that day he puts it on his pocket. And here's the greatest thing about that I will say specifically about Joe Rogan. He is the most selfless dude I've ever met. I called him the day after I did Letterman, and I was like, I go, man, I got to thank you because of you, they heard your podcast. They, you know, Justin Stengel was a friend of mine before he lobbied for me. But when I went in to do the pre-interview, all they had done was just listen to Rogan's podcast. They're like, can you tell this story? Can you tell this story? Can you tell this story? Joe was like, you don't have to thank me. I didn't do a fucking thing. I wanted people to listen to my podcast, so I put you on.
Yeah.
He is... I would venture to say he's solely responsible for the funding of this documentary. He deserves credit somehow.
Yeah, I think we were right around, I think, 8,000. And then the T-shirt went live
on
Joe Rogan's show, and it went to 16,000 like overnight.
And then the next day he wore it for the pre-fight.
Right.
And it was, I mean, through the roof. So that happened.
Well, that's the first great thing I think that creatively we figured out a good design for a shirt that people wanted, and then, you know, Joe has a celebrity. There's no, when you deal with something like Kickstarter, if we'd set out to make a film that could have changed the world and cured cancer, we could have put our trailer out there, but without anybody talking about it, raising $32,000 still would have been near impossible.
Having you have the access that you do and the sheer like Twitter followers. Well, and stuff
I will venture to say that I did have some celebrity friends who refused to help, And Joe selflessly was like, why not? I want you to make this. I want to see it. That's his whole reason was I want to see it.
Yeah.
Fucking make it.
Right.
And then that happened. And then because of that also happening at the same time, we went out to start shooting. And I think I want to say instantaneously, Patrice had a stroke. That was
pretty. It was very close. Yeah, right?
Patrice had a stroke, and I was in a and I was living very hard at the time. I would say I was 245. I was probably in my biggest I've ever been, and I was drinking a lot. And I think we started the documentary in fucking Amsterdam.
Yeah,
which
which
is like we're talking about fucking like a soon. We're talking about Hurricane Sandy right now. Like right. The two storms are meeting, and then all of a sudden there's a cannonball in it, and that is the Machine story starts becoming popular. I remember the look on your faces. I think it was when I got off stage from Amsterdam. You guys were backstage. You filmed backstage. I got on stage, and the first thing in a Dutch-speaking fucking audience, when I got on stage, someone yelled, "The Machine!"
And there was a guy there with a Machine shirt on.
Yes!
Right.
And you guys are like, can you fucking believe that? Now, we had set out to make a documentary that was completely and totally about what it's like to be on the road with no fame and how rough it is and how lonely it is and all of a sudden our first day of shooting we're in a foreign country and a guy's wearing my shirt and he's like "The Machine." And I was like, wow, that led to
It's been fascinating because as we went along the the shirt, the interactions with people buying the shirt after the show, certainly your time on Rogan's podcast and Rogan's fans at shows, people yelling "The Machine," that all started to become kind of a subtext to the film as well. Like we certainly didn't set out to have that be part of it, but you couldn't avoid it. I mean, it was everywhere you went, people are yelling "The Machine" later in shows. They're calling out like they're at an Eagles concert looking for Hotel California.
Dudes that were on the train with me showed up to the fucking shows.
Yes.
In Russia, from Russia.
The Russian train trip.
Yeah, right. We got that.
DJ showed up to the fucking show. Yeah. Maybe my great... I don't want to tip the hat too much,
right,
but I got it somehow.
Yeah,
he showed up, and it was... I mean, it was just... It was, you know, it culminated into all these crazy events that I don't think any of us planned for.
It definitely kind of took on a life of its own. I can tell you the most surreal moment for me... In the entire experience so far, and of course we haven't put the film out, so who knows what happens.
Oh, when we walked into the hotel room and Zach Galifianakis was trying to suck his own dick.
Right, that was weird. But no, I think
that was more creepy. But
no, I think
okay, didn't happen. Everybody, right. No one tweets Zach. Right. Not that Zach reads his Twitter. Yeah, that fucking Zach's tweeting.
The most surreal thing for me still so far is when somebody tweeted a picture of a tattoo that they had gotten their arm,
Monkey Todd.
On their,
I know you don't get a tattoo of someone doesn't get a tattoo of your face. You don't know the dude's name.
Right,
Monkey Todd
on the inside of his body, a big tattoo of the Machine shirt, the profile of Bert, and just trying to wrap your head around the fact that if we don't ever do this, we don't ever create that design.
Well, I go back even further than that. I go back. I was at Long Branch Park in upstate New York with my mom on a.
Don't worry about it. Keep going. It's a podcast. You're allowed to have callers. Hang on. Hello, caller, what's your name?
Hey, so we're heading home now.
Okay, well, we'll see you guys in about an hour.
All right, well, Dad wants to go get something to eat, so don't bother with bringing food over.
Oh, okay, fine, I love you.
Love you too.
Bye, it's my sister, keep going. I should have told her she was on. I did that to Tom Segura last week. He got fucking pissed. So, okay, you were saying.
Like Jeff was talking about the tattoo, I go back to... I was on a tram with my mom and Julie in Long Branch Park in upstate New York, and we had a guy that was a graphics artist guy that bailed on us last minute to do this T-shirt design. He screwed us over right in the middle of the Kickstarter campaign. So I was on my iPhone getting pictures, collecting pictures from the internet, these Che Guevara pictures and propaganda pictures, Russia propaganda, and sending them to Chris Mason, our friend and artist who did the T-shirt. And I just go back to that moment to cut to this Twitter shot, this guy with that with that artwork on his arm.
I remember.
It blows my mind.
Who was I with when we first saw it? I think I was with one of you guys.
No, you. I think you might have texted me about it.
Yeah, I want to say I was with. I know I was with a comedian because I saw it and they were like, "Can you fucking believe that?" And I was like, "Wow, that's really." That's next level shit. That's like being given cocaine after a show. Like that's like holy shit, you've made it type things.
Somebody has tattooed their face on your arm forever.
And it was I wish I could credit the comic who said this, but he goes, "The fucking pressure you got to live up to now." I said, "What?" And he goes, "You got to get famous."
It's like,
or this guy's fucked his arm up for life.
It's like
and he was like, "You can never molest a kid. You'll fucking ruin this guy."
It's like at the last line of Saving Private Ryan. It's like, earn this.
Monkey Todd. I've run into him since.
You've seen the actual...
Yeah, he's in Richmond, Virginia. He's a huge Death Squad fan. He is fucking Death Squad blood in, blood out.
That is commitment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've shown that to other people when I'm telling about the doc.
Mason's mind.
It is. It's hard to kind of wrap your head around that.
Do you think they got the Chris Mason insignia at the bottom?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Do you think they put that in there?
He should have signed it. One of the things that's interesting is realizing when we were on the road with you, the fact that this film is going to get seen. There's an audience for it. There's people who want to see it, which as a documentary filmmaker or a wannabe documentary filmmaker, which is all we were at the time, that's a big fear. Is like, can we make a film that people will even bother to watch?
Yeah.
And so knowing that there are people who are going to watch it, you know, that alone is also a little surreal. There's people who will tweet or make comments on a YouTube that say, when is this coming out? I can't wait to see it. That feels like a lot of pressure. That feels like a lot to live up to sometimes where you feel like...
there's some that I think that people that probably that tweet me about it think that we have an office space and that I go to the office space every day.
Yeah,
and I'm always hanging out with you guys. And I'm like, guys, I'm on the road 48 weeks a year, so I'm never fucking home. You guys, you probably see my family more than I do, Jeff.
Yeah, that's true.
And Jeff's wife and my wife are best friends, and our kids are best friends, and so they play all the time. And Jeff Johnson. He brought his kids down here to do kettlebells exercises.
They got to work out with both. So.
Jeff Johnson's got all boys. Asshole.
And, no, I got two boys and a girl.
No, all boys. One boy is all boys to me. Yeah. I got two girls. That's right. Piano recital today. Holy shit. So I'll talk about that later. I got a bit prepared.
No, but this is the reality of how the work goes down is, like Jeff said, I think it was like late spring, early summer that we finished shooting. It's a lot like painting a room, which it's a lot. It's so much work goes into prep of syncing up audio, of syncing up A and B roll or A and B camera shots, of organizing, of getting all the selects together, of finding music, finding a musician, getting a graphic artist on board.
Did we get that guy?
What's that?
The guy
from the trailer?
Fucking yeah.
That's Ivan Ives.
We got Ivan Ives.
He is supposed to be doing an original song for our film.
Russian hip hop.
While we're here, I'm going to give him a plug right now. If you like the trailer, if you have seen the trailer and you like the song in there, go to iTunes. It's called Red Scare, Ivan Ives. Drop $1, $1.29 or whatever it costs.
Yeah,
he let us use that song, and it's phenomenal. He's such
a great
artist.
Fucking song. That
and,
song when you hear it,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everyone that told me that when you do a podcast, you got to have that fucking song lead in. Do we own it? Do we own it?
No. We have the rights for the trailer and for the film.
Right for the trailer and the film because he actually had. Unfortunately, licensed it to a music company before.
Yeah. So instead of getting it for a favor, we had to pay for it.
He helped us get it for a good rate, but the other song he's going to work on just for the film, specifically for the film. So
talk about the process of putting this film together, because you shot a dickload of footage.
So we got so much footage, and it's Jeff and I, our background has been trailers, movie trailers, and commercials for movies. So we work in very short form. Long form is new to us, so it's a behemoth to undertake this kind of a project. So it's a lot of organization. You know, I work as an editor all day. Jeff just started his own company about a year ago.
About the same time as the documentary.
He's working like crazy. Yeah. So it's, I edit 10 hours a day, and I come home 4 nights a week and edit for another 2 hours, basically, 4 nights a week. So that's, it's only one work day, really, of working on the documentary per week.
Yeah.
So you want
it to be good. And that's the other thing.
That's the other thing, too. It's like, I am not going to put out something that I don't feel very strongly about. So it's trying to make it good, exactly.
Which the upside of being on Kickstarter is, you mentioned it earlier, that it's going to be our film. We have the freedom. We don't have someone else funding it or telling us how it has to be done.
We've had subtle options of people interested in purchasing it as a reality show.
Yeah, and when one of the things we've liked about doing it our way is that in the end, we're going to be able to make the film we want to make. Now, the downside of that is if someone were paying for it and producing the film and had a deadline for it, they'd be probably paying us to work on it all day long every day, and we'd be done sooner. So it's a trade-off.
I mean, even in shooting it in Amsterdam, Showtime had an interest in it out of the we literally maybe shot 2 days.
Yeah.
Showtime was like, so when do you think we can see a cut of this?
Yeah,
because we were shooting that Showtime special. Right. And Gary Garfinkel was who's a fucking great guy was like, I mean the footage he saw us shooting in Amsterdam I mean Hannibal Buress, who's one of my I hate to say one of my favorite comics now because he featured for me once. So it's, hey, I hate to see him leapfrog me like that, but he really is. There's a moment where Hannibal gets, I will say, liberally inebriated and believes that the cameras that are following me around are paparazzi following me around, and he does his best to distract the paparazzi. It's fucking so funny. And I told Hannibal, I go, I will never let you look foolish in this. But there is a. I'm sure the way you cut it together is going to be so fucking hilarious because he was blitzed.
Yeah. It was that was a funny moment for me because we were in Amsterdam. We'd come out of one of the warm up shows, and everybody was going to head to the whiskey bar.
Warm up show, by the way, is me, Hannibal, Kyle Kinane. I want to say Russell Peters, Tom Rhodes. Not Russell Peters.
Not Russell
Tom Rhodes, Christina Pajinski.
Yeah.
It's the red light live from Amsterdam red light district special. And is this the warm-up show where I fucking bombed?
No. This was the show before. This was at Tumler.
Tumler
show. And we were at the Tumler show, and we're all standing outside waiting for cabs, and somehow we get split up into two cabs. And by this point, Hannibal...
They closed the bar down at Tumler, and they go, you guys can hang out. And that was our first mistake.
Right.
Because we hung out, and everyone... And we're in Amsterdam. It was fun. Everyone's abroad. Everyone's got a passport in their back pocket. Anything could happen. And freaking, we proceed to get blitzed. The group, the lot of us, and then heading to cabs. And
Hannibal had been so friendly and so like
he was great. All
easy
night.
To be around. Really liked being around him. I thought just funny as hell. I thought he was hilarious. And
he is really fucking funny.
Yeah, and I've seen his special since, and I think he's really really funny. But we got split up into two cabs, and the rest of you go in the front cab, and I end up in a cab with Hannibal. And I think I'm trying to remember who else. Like, there's only three of us. One other person. It might have been the guy from Amsterdam, an Amsterdam comedian. There was one guy that was kind of hanging around.
Pete Johansson, maybe.
It wasn't Pete. It was. I don't remember. It's irrelevant. But I'm sitting there in the cab, and I was trying to just kind of make conversation with Hannibal at this point because I don't know him very well. And we're riding, 20 minutes over to the whiskey bar, and he's really really quiet. I'm like, are you all right? And he's like, maybe you shouldn't bring the cameras into the next place. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, maybe you shouldn't keep following. I think they're trying to get away from you. And I'm like, get away from me. I'm like, we're with Bert. And he's like, just trust me on this. I think they're trying to get away from you. And he's like, are you writing a book? Are you, what is this all about? Why are you asking me all these questions? He starts getting really intense. I'm like, oh, this is going south. And, so by the end of the ride, he goes, I think that other car with everybody else in it went in a different car because they're trying to get away from you because they think you're paparazzi. And I'm like, okay, I just start clam up. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. We get out of the car.
You're in a car by yourself.
I'm in a car pretty much by myself with Hannibal in a country I don't know.
And a guy from a different country
I don't know. I'm the guy with the camera.
The only two people who don't speak English are fighting.
And this is like almost literally day one of shooting.
Right. I'm just barely starting to get the feel for the whole thing anyway. It's a little bit of an awkward situation to follow you around with a camera the whole time anyway because you feel a little bit,
Yeah.
It feels a little voyeuristic and like people aren't always sure they want you around. So you're trying to kind of balance that. And he's basically calling me paparazzi here
We're getting to the next bar and everyone's buzz sets in where we're like, now everyone's buzzed. And we order three glasses of wine. I'll never forget this. We order three glasses of wine. And I tell Hannibal he didn't have one because I didn't order him one. It was me, I think Aaron, who books the improv, Christina Pajinski, and Hannibal sitting at a table. And you guys are filming from afar now, and like paparazzi.
Right.
And Hannibal keeps going, they're watching us, they're watching us. And I've got a mic on. I'm like, I know. I'm paying them to watch us, Hannibal.
Right.
And he goes, well, we got to get rid of these. And he pounds all three glasses of wine. And I go, all right, we got to get him home. I tell you guys, I go, do not film Hannibal fucking hammered.
Yeah.
Like, and you guys are like, totally cool. He's a nice guy. We don't want him to look at all foolish. And there's, I don't guarantee you anytime that this is shown, anything that is going to be is either fucking hilarious or not fool. Like, it's going to be great. So we go to walk Hannibal home, and we're walking Hannibal home that night, and we run into Tom Rhodes. And we're like, Tom, can you take him from here? And he goes, yeah. And then he puts his arm around him. He says to Hannibal, where are you going? And Hannibal goes, out. And Tom goes, me too. And they take off in the night. They fucking go out and party for the rest of the fucking night. Oh, There was so many. What are the highlights? I want to hear you talk about the movie because I'm excited to see it. What are the highlights that you go that was fun, and then we can all recollect.
Well, one of the things that I would, and I, just to tease it a little bit, one of my things that I think is going to be one of my favorite moments in the film is going to be London, which was just this little offshoot.
That was great.
It's just this little offshoot kind of trip.
I was there for a total of 16 hours, but it was a great moment.
Yeah, it was.
I think we all were there for a total of 16 hours.
Well, you were there quick too. He stayed longer.
I stayed a couple extra days, hung out, got with some hookers. No,
and
I didn't. My wife's not
with a hole in the sheet.
No, I didn't. Yeah, with a hole in the sheet because that's the way Mormons do it. No, it was Matt. Right, Matt
wanted, Schuller.
Schuller wanted
Matt
you
Schuller.
To do a set at the
laughing the
store?
funny
the store.
Comedy store
in London.
Comedy store.
You weren't that into it. And in the end, it ended up being, I think, one of my favorite moments
to say
from,
too much
from the film.
It
because
it's
I don't.
Really what it
yeah,
is,
again,
but...
again, I want to. I want to let the film kind of be.
Let's just say it was a. It was an underdog moment.
Yeah,
it
I
was,
think that's going to be one of
I'll
my.
I'll say
favorite
this:
things.
It's a moment that every comic has gone through, and for the most part, every comic will identify with, and I identified with it because it's stuff I haven't gone through in years, and it was a really. Just.
But it was weird because the dynamic was that you're a well-known established comic that was getting very little respect, and that's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what made it a very interesting moment.
I just hit the mic with the bottle opener. We're opening another bottle of wine.
Yeah,
as always, we're drinking in the man cave.
Yeah, it's fun. And we had as a group we were only there together that night.
Yeah, that's
I mean.
It. Just we got there about 3 o'clock.
Yeah, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We met up. You did Rachel Ray. You did a Rachel Ray via Skype, I think.
Yeah, I did a Skype with Rachel Ray. I sprinkled Super Million hairs in your hair.
I got Super Million.
It started
hairs.
Raining.
Right, started raining.
Ran down his face.
And then we went over to the Comedy Store, and all I remember is that it ended with me eating the spiciest
Indian
food that I've ever had in my entire life. And I remember, I remember the next morning, and I had a Cuban cigar, $20 Cuban cigar someone had given me. And I smoked it the next morning, and I was like, this is a bad idea before I get on a plane.
Yeah, I had one of my own personal funniest things happen in London as well. I stuck around afterward.
Oh,
I wanted to see I stuck around afterwards in London because I'm like, I'm flying to London. I'm not going to take off quickly. I'll see my family later. So I went and saw Wilco on Friday night. They happened to be playing there, one of my favorite bands. And then Saturday, I got up to go, and I didn't drink at Wilco at all. I didn't. You know, I'm like, I'm here by myself. The last thing I'm going to do is going to get wasted in a foreign country and have trouble making my way back on with the tube, the underground, whatever they call it. So the next morning I get up and I have an English breakfast, which is just all grease, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, bangers and mash and all that kind of crap.
They even fry the tomato.
Yeah, they fried everything, and which, you know, I'm not opposed to that. But I didn't feel very well that morning, and I didn't know why, but I thought breakfast was going to help. So I go to Abbey Road because I'm a tourist. So I want to stand where Abbey Road in the middle and take a picture. And I didn't feel great. And as I got back to the station, the St. John's Wood station, I knew it was just, I'm like, I don't know which end it's going to come out of, but it's not going to be good. And I got on the subway and we make it one stop and it is packed, wall to wall people. And I'm standing next to a guy has his arm up and clearly does not have deodorant. And it's getting to me, like the motion of the train, the people. We get to the next station, and as we pull into the next station, the doors open, and out of nowhere, I vomit all over the floor. Just puke all over people's feet. I absolutely unloaded.
A 6-year-old.
I unloaded, and I hear the voice say, "Mind the doors," and all I could think is, I just leapt backwards out. I was standing right in front of the door, so I just leapt backwards out onto the platform. And the timing couldn't have been better because
shut,
I leapt out the doors. They closed. The train rolls away. Everybody else is looking like,
they're like, fucking Americans, you know.
I'm out of here.
I didn't know
you
what throw, to do.
You yelled, Ali Akbar, threw up, and then walked
right.
out. They were like, another tube bombing.
Right. I had no idea what else to do, so I went with just straight-up survival instincts, and I pulled the chute, and I jumped out backwards.
Fucking great.
I had a backpack on and everything, so it felt a little bit like skydiving out of the subway. It was, and I felt great after that. I went and saw James Earl Jones in a play. I had a great day. The rest of the day was fantastic. Once I puked in the
what
subway.
What a weirdo are you that you fucking, that you were in London by yourself. You saw Wilco sober and then took yourself to see James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones. He's on stage. It's Darth Vader, like
But no, but he's just James Earl Jones. Right. Was he playing Darth Vader?
He was not playing. He was in. He was
playing
driving
someone's
with Daisy.
Grandfather.
He was driving with Daisy.
Shut up. James Earl Jones played the black dude, right?
Well, yeah.
Not in theory.
Not Miss Daisy.
What
he
if
was
they flip-flopped
Miss Daisy.
And the girl from Titanic played the driver, and he played the...
No,
he was like,
it was Vanessa Redgrave was Miss Daisy.
Vanessa Redgrave.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, but I threw up on the subway. So I like to think that somewhere some person is telling that story about like some...
Very different story.
Yeah, very different story.
So okay, so London is definitely, I think, all of our top...
It was a
top,
cool highlight, yeah, yeah.
Fucking awesome. We went from Amsterdam to London to... And then we went on the road.
Yeah.
It was a packed month. I would say it was a packed... Whatever the timeline...
All the way through
timeline,
New Year's.
Through we did, was everything was packed because my schedule had just started getting super, super busy, where it was like, right, I could make money, not a lot of money, but I could make a little money, and I was selling shirts, and I was like fucking Tempe, Columbus, Tampa,
New York.
Like
Chicago.
Chicago.
December.
I mean, it was a swamp schedule.
Yeah.
And you guys got to see what it was like to be on the road.
I mean, for Jeff and I, you know, our schedule was pretty harsh because keeping up with you, but we would leave like Friday evening because we had to work a full work week. We'd take like a red eye and get to wherever we're going at like 6 a.m., which is when you started your whole media thing.
No, you would leave Thursday night. You'd leave Thursday night on
get
the
there
red
Friday
eye.
Morning.
I mean, Thursday night.
And
Thursday
take
night.
Friday
yeah,
off.
Sorry,
and
Thursday night.
I'd catch you for radio.
Right, right,
go
right,
do
right.
Radio.
Yes,
we'd pick
Thursday
you up
night.
At the airport. Go do radio. Come home. And then you guys had to shoot like B-roll of the city or whatever the fuck you had to do all day long. And then we'd go to the show. We'd do two shows Friday and end up partying balls. And I think Jeff Johnson got a little bit of the fucking roadsies where he started like get to the green room and he'd be like, oh, we got a case of Heineken's, let's start drinking. I was like, oh, someone just started featuring for a headliner. Everyone does that when they're young. They're like, well, this is great. Can I get nachos? And they're like, yeah, nachos? You want wings with that?
But it was exhausting. It really was. It was very tiring. I remember in New York in particular because we flew out on a Thursday night. Red eye. Got there at 6 a.m. And normally, if we got lucky, we'd go to the hotel and check in at like 8 a.m. if there's a room. But New York did not have a room until 3 p.m.
They had told us on the phone, too. I had checked on New York, and they said, we should have something for you. It's, you know, it won't be a big deal. And we got there, and there was nothing. So we sat in the lobby, and we were just.
It was winter time, so it was like, it was winter. It was cold out, so it was really warm in the lobby. And we'd sit down in the lobby, and Jeff would nod off in like 10 seconds and just start snoring in the lobby, like super loud. And I was like, let's just go. Let's go somewhere.
Yeah. I don't remember New York at all.
Well, New York
was
that
shooting.
New York was where your
book publisher,
ex girlfriend from the
right.
Trip.
We went and hung out. We went and hung out with
what's her name?
Oh, Jody.
Jody
in
the
Village
in New York.
Right?
Her friend. Yeah,
we went and hung out in the Village in
New York. Yeah, we had those tater tots at that bar, your friend's bar.
Oh shit!
Or her friend's.
That was that trip.
Yeah.
And that we went to your book agent. We went and did a
yeah. We actually shot some stuff at your book agent.
Yeah, we were across town. Yeah. We were.
Did I know about this?
You were there.
While you were there.
It was a meeting with your book agent and
hold on.
I don't know if you're a book agent. Was it his book agent?
Book agent.
Oh yeah. My book agent. I thought you were talking about my publisher. I was like,
no, book agent.
Yeah. We did shoot.
We
there.
Shot that
there.
Meeting and we'd gone down to try and we wanted to get some B-roll of Occupy Wall Street because that had been big at the time, and of course they busted it up. I think the night before
we got there.
So we show up and it's just like,
well, we definitely got Occupy Tempe.
We got we got
Phoenix.
Occupy Phoenix. Yeah, we kind of I did anyway. Certainly early on, I was starting to think that was going to be kind of an interesting side story of like every city you go to, because it was in Amsterdam too. I mean, they had an Occupy in Amsterdam at the time we were there, and Phoenix had it. And I thought, well, that'd be kind of interesting to see. And then
now it just dates it.
Now it fizzles it out. It's just like,
So now what is the trajectory? What tell me before we talk about the trajectory of the documentary and what we plan to do, what you technically, because I don't really have any grand plans. I think I'll follow whatever you guys do.
Well, it's a, you know, we've been backing off a little bit of the word documentary, but it's a road movie. It's definitely, it's a documentary, but it's a road movie, and it's a year in the life, really.
Yeah.
And there's some specific festivals that have that show this kind of thing. That one was at the what was that one we saw?
The Arclight. Festival. That I think it would have
like
worked
a
in
performance
but we...
documentary or something like that category. So
there's others.
So it's
too.
More
there's
like it's
that...
more like Wilco's I'm Trying to Break Your Heart, That's my favorite fucking documentary ever.
It's absolutely one of my favorite as well.
And so are you going to show me Addicted to Heroin trying to tell my son how to play the drums?
I'm hoping that if we can get you... Well, you know, the one that I think we wanted to strive for was Dear Zachary. I don't know if anyone's seen that, but, you know, if we could get you walking into the ocean at the end
of
this...
Take two seconds, write that down, and then... Then Google it when you get to your office, right, or wherever you can, or you're not driving.
Dear Zachary,
then,
that's how this film's going to end.
Get out. Fucking. Right. What a great joke that is.
It's really a fantastic joke. It's very funny, very timely. You know, I don't know if this is going to change anybody's life, but the truth is when we were talking about making the documentary, we had a friend who had gone to India to document this disaster, this Union
Bhopal
Carbine disaster in Bhopal, India. And we watched this. I watched this film, and I was like, gee, you know, this is somebody we know, and he's doing this film that could change the world. And we were thinking the same thing, and we met you, and we're like, well, this guy's funny. Let's just roll with this. you know, but to be completely honest, it's going to sound cornball, but I love comedy, and I love the impact that can have. You know, I think laughing's important. I do genuinely think that that's important. I think being able to get away and divert yourself from some of your regular bullshit, and when you have tough stuff that's going on even in the world or whatever, to get away from that for even a couple of hours, I do think is very therapeutic and important. So I'm hoping that...
Now, was I as big of a fuck up on the road as you expected, or less of a fuck up?
Probably less. We were probably hoping for...
You know, I was impressed with how professional you were. I mean, in terms of your ease of what you do. I mean, you can just step into it. You can have, you know, three or four drinks, step out on stage, and it's not just rehashing your stand-up. It's you tie in the audience, you tie in little tangents from that day that happened into a show, and it was actually very impressive.
God damn it, that's gonna be a sound bite.
That's a good one.
That's fucking good.
Well, one of the
about me?
No, one of the moments for me. One of the moments.
This
for
is
me,
gonna be a fucking podcast I listen to. Right, it's a fluff right, piece.
It's just like a masturbatory piece for you.
I can't wait to see this fucking documentary.
Let me back up and think about what didn't impress me. What didn't impress?
The Columbus for me was that was pretty interesting. I don't remember. I can't even put the timeline in my head. I just know Amsterdam and London were very early on, and then at some point Columbus. We roll in, and we come in on a red eye, and we're thinking, okay, we're going to head to the hotel. We're going to take a nap. We got to baggage claim, and you called Jeff, and you go, I'm heading out to do media. Where are you guys at? We're like, we're at the airport. We just got here. We're exhausted.
What's his name from?
Stroop.
Stroop. And you go, well, we're coming to pick you up. I'm going to do radio. And we're like, fantastic. You know, we were just bleary, just exhausted. And we go to do media, and you would bounce from radio to radio, and you would have your stuff was so on and so fixed to what they wanted and to what fit them, and it was edited. Aww. You jumped so quickly into able to edit your stories
exactly, and you were able to stand back and really kind of see the picture, and the, you know, as much as I, the little bit of the industry that I've been involved with in the last 20 years, you know, it's, you're known as the kind of guy that gets it. You get the big picture of what's expected from you, I think, from everybody.
That's so fucking great to hear about me.
Yes.
I'm going to love this documentary. Now, what's
But even like, even remember Rachel Ray? Remember the Rachel Ray Skype thing in London?
Yeah.
The producer gets on and gives Bert like an earful in like about 10 seconds, like what they need from him. And the story, this quick backstory for Rachel Ray's show when he was shooting with her and stuff.
Right.
And he takes it in, digests it, and then spits it out naturally.
Well, the same thing when we were in Tampa for New Year's. Oh my God. I was with
are
you.
Hold on. Are
I was with you.
Using,
I'm sorry.
Are you using the guy who offered me the opportunity to ride around in hot whips as we both get loose?
The text
in a Lambo?
Getting loose in a Lambo. At the very least, I think that scene, the scene of us at least reading his tweets
the next day. Yes.
Whether or not we show him, I don't know. We haven't decided.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna put a face with it, but I think we need to read the tweets.
You know, we don't want to be something where we're completely ridiculous.
He was a fan too, and I hate that. He'll appreciate that we're talking about
him. We will share at least our reading of his tweets because we think it's very funny.
The tweets are just hilarious.
So what are you gonna say? Tampa
Tampa
about me
back to me
yeah yeah yeah
no, no, Tampa again tangent. It was We were, you had done a show on Thursday night. I was there for the Thursday night show or the Friday, Thursday night
you
show.
You got there before I did.
I got there early and you had done the Thursday night show. We were out late. We were out late partying. I think we had gone to the, did you go to the taco truck? With
no.
No, okay, so we'd gone to the
holy shit, was that with Cowhead?
We went with Cowhead to the taco truck late. The next morning, God, we had to
was,
be up. And
that
we got
was
picked
such
up.
A regrettable night.
It was
in so many respects.
It was we were, yeah. It was a long night. It was fun, but the next morning we had to be up early for you to go do TV.
Hold on, real quick.
Yeah.
Some of the funniest stuff is the next morning, the car ride.
Yes.
When you guys go do TV. That was the only time you did TV, I think, right?
Yeah, it's the only time? TV that I think that we were a part of at all.
There was some funny shit.
Yeah, but we were
really?
Oh my God.
We were exhausted.
Like what? give me a hint. I remember doing TV. TV is when
it's the car ride leading up to TV.
We picked up a 12-pack, I think.
We did.
You were drinking in the car. I mean, it's like 6 in the morning, and the producer comes out of the car, so you're trying to hide it. And you
may have tried to give a beer to some girl on the street.
Oh, right. That was after.
Jesus
oh,
Christ.
Geez. This is the funniest thing
oh,
ever.
My God. That girl.
We go,
yes.
We go to back. When we're heading back to the hotel, there's a girl who appears to be homeless in a parking lot, and you're like, pull up, let's talk to her. So we pull up to talk to her, and you're like, what's going on in your life? And you get like this really kind
of
nice moment with her where she's kind of telling you life sucks, and not everything's gone right for me, and she's homeless. And I don't remember if we gave her cash or not, but you go, hey, do you want a beer? And you hand her a beer. And then after that, you ask how old she is, and I think it's 19 or something. Like, I don't think that'll make the film because I think it's literally.
I took it back, right?
Yeah,
yes,
took
you took
it back.
Yeah, I took it back. Yeah, I think contributing to a minor was the concern at that point. But all of that said, you go in, you walk into the TV studio, and then again, you jump on, and you just turn it on, like a light switch. Like a
big fat phony.
The one
thing I remember about that radio show is they were like, I walked on set and they were like, they had a bottle of champagne. I go, hey, you guys got champagne? And they're like, yeah. And I go, are we drinking it? And they were like, yeah.
So they were phonies.
So I opened it and they were like, woo, we got a live one. And I was like, yeah. And I started drinking it and they're like, he's drinking it. I was like, it's fucking New Year's Eve.
Right, right.
Oh, that was so funny.
You took your shirt off, I think.
Have not done that TV show since.
That's shocking. Okay, that is shocking to me.
Is as much praise as we just laid on Bert about how professional he is.
He's an asshole too.
But there is this is
give me a clean break so I can edit this out.
Jeff and I went into this knowing that we're gonna it's gonna be a warts and all kind of thing, which is meaning we're not gonna shy away from the bad moments.
The affairs, the drugs, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So we didn't get that on camera, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, for all those big moments like London that were great to watch, there was also some moments like in, was it Columbus or Chicago?
Chicago.
Where there was a Russian girl?
Oh my God.
Russian girl, maybe. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about it is there was a girl in Chicago that was not a fan of Bert's. And
she had sat through the show.
Bert probably didn't show himself in the best light in this moment, and it's definitely going to be in the film.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's going to be a good yeah.
Can't wait. I can't fucking
so
wait.
So it's going to be, you know,
yeah,
both sides
yeah, that'll
of
be
spectrum.
Fun. You were definitely I think by the time it was over, you were pissed at us for essentially I think egging her on and
I don't remember any my memory is so shot. I don't remember that in the slightest. I do remember that girl. I remember her being fucking.
Let me say this.
You better show her in the same fucking light you show me.
It's going to be an honest interpretation. I'll tell you that. It's going to be.
But you're telling me I come off looking like a cunt?
No. I think it's it'll be honest and real.
Well, the thing I would say about it is that we did not see, certainly on the road a lot, you having people that didn't like you. And so this was the one instance we saw where somebody, you tried to kind of cozy up to her after the show randomly. You know, you were like, hey, did you like? And she gave you the cold shoulder quick.
I do remember that distinctly. Yeah. I remember, I could tell you where she was standing.
I remember that, I can too. That
hardcore. And she was like, oh, and I got fucking pissed.
Yeah.
I got pissed because I was like, oh, God damn it. I'm going to look like a fucking slut. Well, whatever I look like is what I am, I guess.
Yeah.
It's part of this process is. Maybe it'll you know, I don't know. There's a lot of things about me after that even worsened. That if you could have been around after the documentary that kind of exacerbated that I had to, like, take full account of and be like, shit, man, like, this is, none of this is real. Well,
that's a good point, because, you know, honestly, to get a full glimpse of this world would have taken quite a bit more money. It would have been us taking a leave of absence from work,
yeah,
and have been truly on the road with you for like 6 or 8 months straight, not just for 2 days out of your 5 day, you know,
yeah,
weekend that you go. But
and
that
here
just
at
possible.
Home with you and all
and be
that
at home,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
didn't do a lot of stuff at home, really. I don't think.
Not too much. There's a few moments here and there.
I'm kind of glad a little bit, because I like, you know, I don't think anyone who's a fan of mine really wants to see me hang out with my kids.
No, there's, you know, there's.
I don't do it well.
There's
to
some
begin
good
with.
Stuff. Some departure stuff. You know, like leading up to when the first stuff when you left for Phoenix. I got some good stuff there of your family and stuff, and you getting ready to go on the road.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny too, because I had this vision of what I wanted the intro to the movie to look like, of like this real gritty me getting up and like a steel worker, like clocking into the plant and
yeah.
getting ready and getting dressed and saying goodbye to everyone, but
that's
everyone's
what we
still
got,
sleeping.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
But it was so funny because you were the best one to do it, because my family knows you. But even still, it's like any moment a camera's around, my kids ham it up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
and it's
yeah.
so you don't get, like, you're not getting a real glimpse of what it's like. You're getting a glimpse of what it's like when there's a camera in my house and my kids see it and they're like, and Isla pulls her skirt up. She's like, my vagina. You're like, oh God, Isla. So what's the trajectory? What's the, like?
I think, you know, it's hard to say, because again, this is it's truly my first time doing like a long form project like this. So if you ask me how long it's going to take me to cut a 30-second spot, I can tell you to the fucking second.
Yeah.
But for this, I'm guessing sometime mid February for our first full length cut, and then from there we're still waiting on some elements, some people to help out.
Yeah, we have a couple of people
some
that
music,
we
music, some animation.
We've touched base with that are supposed to be bringing some
can
stuff
I talk about
for?
The animation guy?
Yeah, sure.
The guy, Corey
Loshuk.
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 If you're out there, Corey, get in touch with us.
Corey, Become My Minions is his, I think it's his Twitter.
Yeah.
But it's definitely his YouTube. And he is the guy that animated the machine video.
Right. And I had spoken to Corey, and you know, we got permission to use the machine story as we want to the video, and then also Corey's
South Park too.
Corey, huh?
Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
That's a whole different thing. I don't know. But we also have him. We have him.
We don't have lawyers. We gotta ask Rocco for $8,000.
Right, right. Rocco, if
that's
you're
where
out
Rocco
there,
comes in. Pay Rocco. For the lawyers.
We do have him working on an animation specific to footage we got from the documentary.
Yeah,
and in a little bit different style than that animation.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, I haven't talked to him for a little while, so we'll see how that's going. But,
so do we put it into like, do we do festivals? Do we sell online for $5? Do we sell it to a studio?
I don't know yet. You know what?
Sell it to a network?
I don't know. I think it's, my inclination is to just
give
sell it,
away.
It online. That seems to be the way that
sell
we
it
do
online.
It these days. I mean, that's
yeah. Did you hear what I just said? I go, give it away, and you're like, sell it online. I was like, I mean, yeah.
Sell it.
Oh, come on, come on.
We want to make
Mr.
some
T-shirt money. You want to sell it?
I want to.
You
want to
sell it?
I want to sell it, baby.
I definitely
get out of this fucking house.
I would definitely. I'd love to do at least a few festivals. I'd love to play it. A
well,
few
it
places
is going
like
to be. There is going to be a
sure.
decent amount of stand up in it. So I think it would play in that present you know, whatever that new niche documentary is
yeah.
the Dark Light had.
You know, I mean, ultimately, I'm excited to at whatever point we sit in something that is a theater. You know, it doesn't have to be huge, but to sit in a theater and watch it with other people, I'm really, really excited for that moment. I'd love to get there, but again, we got to do it at the right pace to where we have time to get it done right.
Can we do viewings? Can we do?
Well, you know, there's some sensitive stuff to this, so you are going to be on board as sort of a producer, obviously, because you need to be able to say yay or nay to some certain
yes.
content.
Yeah.
So,
but you have to say yay to everything because you want to be honest.
Yeah. We're gonna have to override you on some stuff.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I'm probably as long as I swear to God, as long as I just don't lose my job at Travel Channel, I'm cool with
it. I really don't, you know, and I don't think we ended up with
I don't behave in a manner that would ever get me to lose my job at Travel Channel.
Not at all. There's nothing, even if I put the worst stuff in, not at all.
Look, the when we started this, part of the intriguing thing was you told us a handful of your stories. You told us wrestling a bear, you told us the machine story. You told us, what else? What are some of the other stories? Anyway, you told us some of these great stories. We're like, oh, if we could come along and find some of those stories. Well, a lot of those crazy things have already happened to you. And so in the context of a show or whatever, the truth is this becomes pretty much an honest, like, this is what you do day in and day out. And
it's a grind. It's a year in the life.
Yeah, the way that you continue to do your work and your job and how you evolve it from one set to the next and one city to the next and one situation to the next and the way you handle the audience in different places, and that's going to be fascinating and fun to watch.
I think it'll be fun. Hopefully this is what, like, this is all I hope for it. I hope it's fun for stand-up comedy fans to watch. I don't really care to draw in someone who's not into stand-up. I don't like those people. I don't want them anyway. Like, I only want people that like stand-up.
Yeah, ultimately,
and if you like
stand-up audience.
And you like this, like if you showed me, you could tell me, man, Louis C.K. did a documentary. We actually just followed himself around for 1 hour, and he put it out. And it's like him just taking a shower and making breakfast. I'd be like, I'll fucking watch. I'll buy it for $5. I'm a fan of stand-up. I love stand-up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If you are a fan of stand-up, you're going to enjoy this movie.
Absolutely.
And I'm 100% sure of that based on what I've seen so far, because I do think we're going to feature a lot of you on stage. If you really love stand-up, you're going to love seeing a little bit about what it is to be, town to town, inner cities.
No. Now, what about us taking it to the cities we filmed it in and doing screenings? Like doing $5 entrance, we rent out a movie theater, we throw it up, $5 entrance.
If it's feasible, if we can make that work, I would love to. Because I just want to be
make
sitting.
Any fucking money.
I just want to be sitting in. I want to be sitting in a theater when people watch it.
Yeah.
At some point, I want to sit in a theater when people watch
it. Exactly. That's what everybody who makes a film wants to do, is have people see it.
Yeah. Ultimately, that's it. And that's the exciting thing about it, is knowing there's an audience that's excited to see it, and the temptation is to rush it, but. If we were full-time filmmakers, we could do this a lot faster. But
yeah, we know two people that made documentaries, and they did it on their own without Kickstarter. They funded themselves.
Right.
That one Indian one, and then another one, a friend of mine, Jeff, who made a very successful one called Marwan Call. And it took them well over 2.5 years to make these things.
Yeah.
And not that they were in that same time, but anybody who makes a documentary does not do it full-time. It's not their full-time job.
Because you don't make money at it for the most part. Unless you're making Bowling for Columbine,
unless you're Michael Moore, he might be the only full time documentary filmmaker.
It's just rare to be able to pull that off. And again, like Jeff alluded to at the beginning, the difference is a lot of people will dive into a documentary and they just go starting to shoot it. They may tell some friends they're doing it, and they go off on these trips to shoot it, and they edit on the weekend. Then they go shoot some more, and they edit some more. And eventually, they've got a film, and they start telling people they have a film.
People don't know this is a documentary until it's a full-fledged documentary.
We started telling people that we had a documentary, we were making a film, before we'd ever shot a frame of it.
Yeah.
So the timeline starts right then for them. How's your film?
And people,
when's your film coming out?
And people are so used to like reality shows where it is like, you shoot something and you come out with a half-hour show.
Well, it's so funny in shooting. What I would never consider Trip Flip a reality show, nor would I consider Birth of Conqueror, anything I've done a reality show. But I do understand the basis of what is ultimately hosted reality television, and I understand the ins and outs of how delicate it is to get a real reaction of someone, but also get a palatable reaction for television, and what you are forced to kind of say to someone walking into a scenario. Like, look, here's the deal. This is how it's going to work. We're going to pick up in the morning. We're not going to be filming the whole time. We're going to drive to location. We're going to keep you sequestered. We're going to walk you over. We hope that your reaction's great. Like, just remember, it's, the basis of reality television is so leaps and bounds different than documentary filmmaking.
Well, because with reality television, it's the pseudo reality where you sort of predetermine what the pieces of the puzzle are, so that you can put that puzzle together afterwards.
Yeah.
With documentary, it's truly a free form puzzle with a million pieces. It's free form to the point where it's like we don't know what we got until we start looking at it, and then we start to try to put this puzzle together that makes no sense until we start putting it together.
It's one of the things that Jeff and I did before we even got involved with you, to be honest. We started doing
our own kind of, you know, college course designed by ourselves on documentary films, which was just to sit down and watch documentaries daily at lunch. We'd watch them for 2 days, and then we'd break them down afterward. What did we like? What did we not like? And the number of times we watched a film where it was obvious that the filmmaker had a plan going in. They had some sort of a storyline in mind. They had some sort of even a script. And they missed really, really key turning points in the middle of it. You'd watch it happen. You go, why are you not diverting here to follow? Yeah. This is far more interesting than where you were heading. And the inability of some filmmakers to do that was a really good lesson to us, I think, of saying, we want to have an idea of what the film's about before we get started. But at the same time, we want to be open to, once we get everything shot, sitting down and go, what did our film become? What did the story become? And don't deny it and roll with it a little bit and allow it to be a little bit off of maybe what you had intended to
Priscilla, get the fuck down.
Like I said, we were were we hoping for you to, you know, go out and wrestle a bear and fire the guy from Creed and all that kind of, yeah, I mean, at some level we're drawn in by that story as well. But the truth is, when we got on the road, there's a great story there. We just needed to be able to allow it to happen. And now we sit there with a mountain of footage. We shot forever. And the irony to me is, I think we tried to invade your life very early on. I mean, right away from Amsterdam. I mean, you got Patrice having a stroke, right? And so as a filmmaker, I'm just like, shit, how do we talk about this in an honest way of somebody that you really care about? But I need to be there with a camera to try and grab it. Of you talking a little bit about what it means to you and your mortality.
Get Bert Blitzkrieg drunk and take him to a hotel room and just have him start speaking in slurred English.
But the truth is, what I figured out too along the way, we got to Portland, and Portland was our last shooting date. And actually, Portland was probably the most at ease, I think we were with each other. Like, you were more relaxed with me around shooting all the time. It wasn't as big a deal. By that point, we'd gotten really, really comfortable with what it was, and we were ending. So, you know, the truth is, if you could probably continue another year beyond that, that's probably the stronger film.
Yeah.
Because you're probably more open.
And
you're probably
And going back even to that point, which was Amsterdam being the first time to shoot.
Right.
I think Bert was the most uncomfortable because here you are with your peers. Oh, your stand-up comic peers.
It's like,
and here's this crew
like
following you around
comics.
And made you feel awkward, I'm sure.
Yeah. It made me feel like it made me feel like I was acting like I was better than everyone.
Yeah,
when I wasn't, I was the same as everyone.
No. It was unfortunate that it was a great opportunity because it was Amsterdam, but it was unfortunate it was the first our first shoot, really.
It was a weird situation, I think, for us all to start in because we felt a little self-conscious. You seemed to feel a little self-conscious. You were kind of at Showtime's beck and call for the week. We were really, honestly, during Amsterdam, we were starting to have a little bit of doubts about, you know, whether it was going to work or not, because we were there for most of a week, and I mean, Showtime had you locked up days at a time.
Four days, I think.
Jeff and I are wandering around the city, going, "Okay, we shot the outside of the Anne Frank house. We tried to sneak a camera into the red light district, but this film right now is all about Amsterdam. I mean, there's no Bert in it anywhere.
Yeah,
and Bert didn't jump into the Amsterdam shoot until late, and we were really starting to go.
We started getting to shoot the special. And then we all went out.
Well, not only that, but we sort of piggybacked on Showtime guys. They were great. They were very nice. We went to the Banana Club or whatever that was and shot some stuff of you there.
Banana Club, just for the record, is very similar to Flying Dildos, except with bananas, and they peel them.
Yeah.
Saddest thing I've ever witnessed.
Which I will say is another bullshit experience for me. Because I got sent back to the hotel for another lens at the beginning.
Here's the deal. This is what happened in Amsterdam. So we were Jeff and I wandered around for 4 days with no Bert at all. It was 4 days in Amsterdam. We were there for six or six and a half days, something like that.
6 days.
And first 4 days, no Bert. He was obligated to do Showtime stuff, interstitials and stuff. We finally catch up to him on his last day of shooting at the Banana Club. That's the last day you were shooting for Showtime
We ran into him kind of almost randomly, didn't we?
Yeah. So we were just wandering around getting B-roll footage in Red Light District and just Amsterdam in general. We're up that main drag in the Red Light District, and we see the Showtime guys, like the cool, young, you know, whatever, producer guys hanging out. We say hi. They said Bert's upstairs. We go up there, hang out, and we just have my camera, which is not a low light camera. It's just a normal video high definition camera. Jeff has the nice the low light camera and the lens, but he didn't have it with him. So we go up there and we're shooting what we can in this dark Banana Club, And I'm like, Jeff, go back to the hotel room.
Before the shoot starts to happen.
Let me paint the picture. The Banana Club, what we had had is we had had the champagne room to ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, with two girls.
And there were a ton of strippers in there.
Yeah, there was like, I think two or three girls that were
two or three girls, and it's stuff. And they were, and it was me, and it was my girl that was my
girl escort, fake escort girl there,
and then basically we had paid them to get B roll of them lap dancing.
Yeah, yeah. So I send Jeff back to the hotel room to get the low light camera,
and I'm like, really?
And in the meantime, really? I shot stuff that we, you know, it was usable. It just doesn't look as good. It's not low light. It doesn't look as great. So Jeff literally walks in like, got the camera. And everybody's like, it's a wrap.
Yeah. I am running. I am running from the red light district back to our hotel.
Like out of breath and sweating.
I am sweating like a pig. Because all I can think is I'm missing the most interesting thing we're going to do in the city the entire time we're here. I'm jumping on a cable car. I grew up Mormon, so I've never seen anything like it in my entire
really
life.
You really grew up Mormon the entire time going, right. Naked girls, low light camera, naked girls.
Right, and I am running.
Naked girls that are trying to escape communism, girls.
I'm running. I'm jumping on the streetcars. I'm making my way back. I am sweating balls when I get there. I get back. I get to there, and you guys are walking out the front door. It's like, we wrapped up. We're going to the bar next door. I'm like, you're kidding.
Oh, God.
And I have my little
outlets. I got some stuff. I got some stuff.
That was our lesson, that it didn't matter when you were going out, where you thought you were going. You always took your equipment with you. It was a good lesson.
That's the thing.
And I never saw the boobies. So that's the other part of the lesson.
Do you use the girl that was hitting on me in Tempe? And do you remember the girl that was jocking my shit hard as fuck?
In Phoenix, you mean? Phoenix.
Phoenix.
I think so. I think at least we have...
She kept staring at me.
That's the one.
That's the thing. We have you saying, like, she's fucking me with her eyes.
Is that the girl?
I did not say that.
You know what? That might have been my interpretation.
Wait, is it the same?
I might have said it. She's fucking me with her eyes. She was fucking me with her eyes. She literally was staring across me going, like, looking at me. Because I think they'd either been to the show or she saw my face on the thing. Oh, no. I take that back. She saw a camera crew following me around.
That might be it.
She saw a camera crew following me around.
It was a different girl than
the one from the show.
She was
okay. No. She was in the show.
Because that one wanted to...
That was just a...
Wait, who is this girl?
You had a couple in
the front row.
That's probably going to be in there. There was a decent amount of crowd stuff going on there. This guy Josh and this girl that you would try to get hooked up there on the first date or something like that. And
you go, she goes to the bathroom and you go, I'm going to hook this up. You want me to hook this up for you? I'll hook this up for you. So you bring them up on stage. You bring up this Mormon chick doing a shot of milk. To do a shot of milk with her boyfriend.
Right. You're going to enjoy this documentary.
Right. I will.
You know what the great thing is? Right. The great thing for this documentary is the number of things you probably have no idea even happened that when you see them in a lucid fashion.
I say the first fucking viewing, we should do a director's commentary where I go, shut the fuck up.
Just all the time.
It's just going to be that over and over again.
God. I do remember fucking blowing up on that Lithuanian chick. I do remember Rocco winning the contest.
The football thing?
I do remember. Chicago. God, this is going to be a fucking fun documentary. We're going to take our first look at it in February?
I hope so. Hopefully February. Again,
Are you opposed to releasing it online for $5?
No. I think that's sort of how it's
going. If we can get like Rogan to do it through his site, because he's already got the fucking big site that can do it. All we
it
have
just
to do
depends
is
on you know
give
I
him,
mean I,
like
I don't
what's
think
it's, it's like ultimately guys like Louis and Rogan become.
Well, that's the thing. If you're not set up with a site, you need to set up a site that can handle kind of traffic.
Yeah, ultimately, I don't know that we have decided 100% where it needs to go, because I think in the end, I think. Our main thing is putting it somewhere where the most people will see it. And however the most people see it,
that's all I want.
Well,
that's all I want.
And I think the fact that this is going to be a good amount of performance and a good amount of stand-up, I think that a download site is ideal for it right now.
Yeah,
but
we'll
see.
I think that would be great. I also wouldn't mind selling it to Comedy Central, to Showtime.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be adverse to that. I wouldn't mind. I'm probably adverse to it going out into movie theaters, only because I don't believe that's the best representation.
I don't
know.
No,
because like
I don't
said,
think
it's
more of people.
It's going to be a lot of concert stuff, so I think it's not quite right for that.
I don't think people are going to go in droves. They don't for a lot of documentaries anyway, honestly. They don't end up flocking to movie theaters for a whole lot of documentaries. I want to see it in a theater with an audience at some point. That's my
number one. I really want to see it in a theater with an audience.
I don't care if it's in the Burbank 16 and we rent the place out and we have an audience. I don't know what'll happen if we have a premiere, if we have a screening, whatever.
Wait, does the footage of the girl who wanted to have sex with me with her husband there in Tampa?
Oh yeah.
Do you know that? Because that was it before I got there or what?
No. This is the New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve. She.
I'm 245.
Oh, dude. I don't even remember this.
You don't remember this? This is the girl that she.
Is it funny that all I remember from this documentary is when people wanted to fuck me?
She is all over Bert after the show. From the
Cowhead show.
She goes from the show
Cowhead
show.
Yeah.
Is just climbing Bert the entire time. Her friend's there trying to mellow her out. And here's the best. Her husband comes up to me. I'm running the camera. I've got the whole camera rig going on. He comes up and he says in my ear, he goes, "Is Bert going to fuck my wife?" This is the guy. I'm like, no.
He's like the victim.
I'm like, if you have to ask me that,
there's nothing I do about it.
He's like, Bert's not going to fuck my wife, is he? And I'm like, if you have to ask me that, I think you've got way bigger issues in your marriage than just Bert. Because clearly anybody that she could with any sort of celebrity, she's going to.
Now, has Julie seen parts of this and gone, oh, no.
No.
Nothing?
No, nobody's no. Nope.
No one's seen anything?
I'm a one-man show right now.
Really?
I've seen some scenes in that. But I don't think it's going to – it's your comedy mostly. Your comedy is – the most offensive or shocking thing will be if people haven't seen your comedy show and expect you to be Bert the Conqueror, that's going to be this – you know, it's the same thing when someone shows up to your show and expects you to be Bert the Conqueror.
I have a little bit fleshed out version of the opening here.
What do you mean?
A little bit fleshed out. You know, I think you've seen this sort of like this.
Throw that in my computer.
It's only about 5 minutes. That's it.
Can we play the audio?
Yeah. It's
Leanne's texting me. She's in the fucking house and she's texting me. She's like, call your dad when you're done. He said he'd like to go out, but it's just him there and he's under the pressure.
Have him come in. Is he here?
What?
Have him come in if he's here.
No, it's Leanne. No, he's fucking at my sister's house. They all went to a movie or to a play. Can we put it in my computer and play the audio for everyone?
Yeah, sure.
Here, give it to me. So what do I got to do? Put this in.
There's only two
it.
Files on there. There's one thing called open.
Oh, please be you and Julie doing a porn. Oh, here comes Leanne.
Don't open another file.
Come in. Look, she's angry already. Hey, babe. Don't let the dog in. Don't let the dog in.
There is a lot more of this cut. This is the only reason I have this is because I just gave this to the music guy to do rip-offs of the opening.
Can you just get Pris? Okay, sorry. Priscilla loves Jeff. So Priscilla just walked in the room. Leanne is sitting, trying to get Priscilla out. I'm trying to open this documentary. Which one is it, teaser or open?
Open.
Okay, all right. So here is the audio. Hang on. I'm going to pause it so we get it clean.
Okay. Yeah, Jeff Johnson is being dog raped right now.
Yes,
okay. All right, Leanne, do you want to – if you can get Pris out – give me two seconds. Get Pris out, come over here, and watch the open that Jeff has.
Okay. The girls are really hungry.
The girls are really hungry. No. We'll figure this out in 2 seconds.
You can't move her.
Yeah, she's friggin' – it's like trying to move Leanne out of bed. It's impossible. She's fucking too big of a dog for this family. All right. Okay, perfect. Pris. All right.
She's like, out. Okay. I think I'm being escorted out.
You hop in, Leanne. All right, just so you know, if you're a fan of my comedy and you're ever thinking about breaking into my house, you got to have to deal with
Pris.
Can
you ITV it up there or no?
I doubt it. Oh, Jesus Christ. This is in the podcast, guys. All right. People are listening to this.
Do you not edit these?
Hold on. This is just... kind of what you've seen a little bit longer. I just gave this to the music guy to rip off the first two cues. That's all of this is.
Okay.
But there is more cut.
Will you turn off that thing just so it's a little quieter? All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the world premiere of the first 4 minutes.
Which is going to be riveting because it's audio only. So
yeah, it's just audio. So I want you to use your imagination and enjoy.
If this were Joe's podcast,
what is he
going to
call this?
What do we call it?
Yeah.
The Machine.
I Am the Machine.
I Am the Machine.
Okay, it's a working title. All right, here we go. Okay, Pris, shut up.
All right. You guys ready for your headliner? Yeah! Come on, people, let's focus. You ready for your headliner? Yeah! You guys are in for a real treat. Actually, it's a privilege working with this guy again. I'm very proud to say that he and I both graduated from Florida State University. I went there several years before he did, and I thought I had a good time. But when he went there, Rolling Stone voted him the number one party animal in the country.
That's
good. Not the school, him, fucking individually.
This is nerves, 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 nerves. The second I hear the music, the nerves disappear. I don't know how it works like that. Like, I'm going to shit my pants and throw up right now. I feel like fucking sick to my stomach. Just say my fucking name. Come on, Bert Kreischer. Bert Kreischer. Music. This is...
All right, it cut from me on going on stage to me in underwear, folding laundry. Now I'm in the shower, drinking wine.
Great shot. Jeff Johnson.
Where's that shot at?
That's Portland.
That's in Portland?
Yeah.
That is the night I was drunk talking.
Signing a shirt. This is a great shot, Jeff Johnson.
Moving through the crowd.
That's a great shot. That's me.
I love that. I love that too.
Bert with his girls on his lap. This is actually from a teaser.
That's a good shot.
That's Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Wait, where did you get that from?
Put it up there.
I remember the night he called us from FSU and said he was going to New York to learn comedy. We listened, and we put the phone down, and we said, oh, this is great. Thank God he's going to do something for a living. And then we looked at each other, and Al said to me, do you think he's funny? I said, I don't know. I've never heard him tell a joke, necessarily. But Bert, within the context of his family, is just regular. I think he has better sense than to try to be funny around us.
Girls, a blowjob should be like a subpoena. Just a knock on the door. Knock, knock, knock. Are you Bert Kreischer? Yeah, I am. Like, your guy should look confused, befuddled, aroused. What the fuck are you doing? And then you just hop up and go, you got served, and you leave.
Temp graphics.
Phoenix.
Fucking absolute chaos.
Burton is underwear again.
Holy shit. I did not expect it to be. I forgot I talked to camera that much.
Oh, yeah?
And I forgot. I was like, oh, I guess they'll just follow me around like a deer that they're stalking. Like, I forgot that. It's fucking great. That's great. And I forgot how fat I was. Oh, my God. 245 in gay pool boy shorts.
Yeah, that's, we can't do any like pickup shots now because you're too thin.
Ah, thank God. Thank God this fucking doc is over. Holy shit. I'm fucking fascinated to see that. The best is my dad does not find me funny in the slightest. He has never once found me funny.
Having your parents in there is great. They say a lot of great stuff.
Oh, I bet they do. They're fucking great.
Yeah, I enjoyed interviewing your parents.
Yeah, that was in Tampa.
Yeah, that was in Tampa.
That was I don't remember the butt cheek shot. I'm coming with you. We're gonna wrap it up. We're at an hour 13. It's a great podcast.
All right.
It's a good podcast for anyone that's been following me through Death Squad and through Rogan. And paid for the documentary. I was curious about the documentary. I'm so glad that I've been wanting to do this with you guys forever, especially since I started the podcast 3 weeks ago. Is there anything else you want to add before we leave?
No, just you know, be patient. We're working. We're always working on this. It'll be a lot of fun to see eventually.
Yeah, it's. I think we've surprised ourselves. The experience you just had, Bert, of watching it and not remembering it. I've had that same experience watching some footage. Jeff will show me a scene, and I'll be watching. I'll be like, I shot that. I can't believe I shot that. I kind of remember being there, but it looks like – and that's after he's gotten through all of my amateur hour shit where he's cut out all the clicking of the changing settings or whatever. But so I made a lot of mistakes, but it's been a lot of fun to see how stuff actually turns out. So I think it's going to be fun for people to watch. I have a good time watching it because I barely remember shooting it. It's surreal. It feels like a whole lifetime ago.
Now, Jeff Hinman, would you say the most surprising thing that came out of this documentary is Jeff Johnson's stand-up career?
You know what? That is an interesting little tangent.
I'm doing a set tonight, actually.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no, I'm doing
so Jeff went on the road with me so much, he was like, fuck it, I'm getting in this. I can do it.
Just a full disclosure, I had started this path. Full disclosure,
please incorporate his bombing in Portland in the fucking documentary.
I had started down this path before I ever got
painful. He goes up and he's like, I got this pretty much figured out. I forget who featured for me. And he was like, but you definitely went up.
Andy Woodall was there.
Andy Woodall. And Andy came up and he was so excited. He was like, he's bombing. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. And I was like, shut up. And so I ran out too.
You know what? If I can say something about Jeff Johnson, is that fear does not stop him from doing anything. So he tried stand up. He's actually doing. I saw a set of his that was actually pretty good. He's doing what he wants to do. That's great.
Yeah.
Maybe in 14 years, you can have two of your friends follow you around and make a documentary about you when you were overweight.
Yeah. When I'm overweight,
the worst part of this documentary is I'm fat as shit for it. I'm gonna look at it and go, oh,
it's all right though. That's good. It's better than that than being thin and then being fat.
I'd rather it
be fat than thin.
I'd rather be thin than fat, and everyone then that's put out there forever is I'm always thin, and then and then I'm fat. All right, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you. Do you have a website or anything?
No.
All right,
we're trying to finish a film. We don't have time to make websites.
No. All right, finish the film, and then we'll do a recap podcast in like February when we're done.
Yes.
Yeah, February,
and we'll talk about it, and we'll do. Maybe we'll do like a screening and then have some people talk about it. Or I don't know. We'll do something. If people like this, if people are like, Bert, I like it better when you giggle nonsensically and burp and exhale. I'll be like, oh, all right. Last one of these. Serious
So weigh in. Weigh in. Vote now. Let us know how you enjoy this style of podcast. Do you like hearing
No, don't weigh in.
Tell us what you think.
Tell us. I'm the only one that gets the fucking responses.
Tell Bert what you think.
You fucking wait till the movie. Tell Jeff Johnson what he's doing. This episode was brought to you by The Machine.